And now we need to liven these things up as we start making our way to the talk. My favorite version of Joy to the World. And now I hope you enjoy this short video.
Just one more
shove. What's that? Do you hear it?
I don't understand, Max.
Christmas Day is in our breath. So
don't they know what I've done?
As he watched the small girl, he thought he might melt. If he did what she did, would he feel what she felt? And the luscious sound swelled, reaching up to the skies. And the Grinch heard with his heart, and it tripled in size.
What? Oh, no.
bread? You came back.
Max, the gifts. We have to return them.
Okay, can everybody see me and hear me? Good. Well, I want to start off by thanking Santa for filling in for me. I was running a little bit late this morning, and that was really very kind of him because he's such an incredibly busy elf. And I understand that he read some letters to you that were a little bit maybe on the downer side, and that our topic today is all about joy. So I just want to start off by asking you, here we are 5 days before Christmas. Well, just where is your head? You know, there's so much going on in the world, and we're nearing the end of just an incredibly historic year. And we're weighted down with so much that I'm just kind of curious. And it's really kind of important because we're addressing a topic that in face of the letters that Santa shared and everything that's going on, it makes talking about joy a little tough. So let me just start off with a quote that is one of my favorite all-time quotes. In fact, in my life, this goes back over 50 years at this point, and it was actually on the cover of the invitation for my first wedding, my wedding with Phyllis. And it had always stayed with me. And it's a quote by Ralph Waldo Emerson. And it goes, "Though we travel the world over to find the beautiful, we must carry it with us or we find it not." Over the past few weeks, we have locked in on the topics of faith, peace, love, and today, joy. And every Sunday we have lit a candle representing these capacities. All of them are related, in fact, are interrelated. And all four come from the same family. All four, especially at Christmas time, frequently are misunderstood. And that's because we tend to treat them as nouns, gifts that we hope to receive and experience. Again, especially at this time of the year. And that's okay to regard them as nouns, as things, as gifts. But the point is, now it's time to open them. Because the truth is that these four words, they may be nouns, but they really act as verbs, action words, that our spiritual journeys call on us to bring forth. Our spiritual journey is calling us to do, to enact. And this might be a little bit easier to see and understand when it comes to faith and love, and maybe even when it comes to peace. But when it comes to joy, maybe not so much. And that's because we think of joy as a result that is dependent upon other things. But the truth is, joy is not something that happens to us. The outer experience of joy, you know, that hearty laugh or even the giggles, are reflections of our own inner joyfulness. And that's why if you are an Ebenezer Scrooge at heart or a Grinch at heart, you cannot be happy. In fact, if you're in that mindset, even the sight of happiness taking place that you witness only serves to bring you down. Well, you know, if you know me at all, you know that I have been a lifelong diehard Cub fan. I have watched loved ones, my father, my brother, really close friends who also were Cub fans, live their entire lives praying for a World Series championship only to die with it never happening. Then in 2016, at long last, after a 108-year drought, it finally happened. And I have to share with you, the joy that I experienced really was short-lived. And I had this realization of, well, so what? What was the big deal? Is that all there is? And something that I thought would be life-changing, well, it really was so, but not in a way which I expected, but in a strange sort of way. It had ended up actually being kind of a downer instead of a long-lasting joy. So let me ask you this. Have you ever had this experience? There is some joyous occasion that's coming up. Maybe it's a party or a picnic. Maybe it's a get-together with people that you care about. Whatever it is, you are passionately looking forward to it. Then the day and time of the big whatever comes. Then it's over. And just like that, as soon as it's over, and even once in a while in a rare case, maybe even before it's over, the joy or what we thought was joy is done. It's no more. It's over. I personally have experienced this many times in my life. And if you can relate to this in any way, then what you have experienced is not joy. It really is a temporary fix. Your short-term high was exactly that, temporary, to satisfy an addiction. And frankly, I think that for many of us, at least to some extent, the whole Christmas season is like this. You know, we could barely get Thanksgiving out of the way and we're just in a tizzy, dancing while singing, while putting up Christmas decorations and making sure everything is just right. And we even sometimes try to control the odors, the smells in the house, and getting the tree and positioning the star or the angel just right is just so important to us. And then on December 26th, well, we still have the tree up. We still light it up. Isn't quite the same. And then by the time the New Year's rolls around, our joy in taking it all down and getting back to whatever the heck normal is almost seems to exceed what we built up during the Christmas season. But these short-term excursions into quasi-joy or whatever you want to call it, you know what? It's understandable and maybe even okay. Because, you know, sometimes we really get pummeled. So many things come at us in life and knock us around and tug and pull on us and disturb us and upset us. Buddhism tells us life is all about trying to deal with the pain. And there is not one among us that is without issues. We all have not one, but two lists. There's the short-term immediate crisis list that we better take care of today. And then there's the longer-term list of general worries and concerns. And these things have a tendency just to beat us up, wear us down, and torment us. And in the midst of it all, to seek out, I don't know, something that lets us just get away from it all. And it makes a lot of sense. But in these cases, whatever it is that we may turn to that is temporary, and anything that is temporary is not joy. Because joy is not a consequence. Joy is not a band-aid. Joy is an attitude. Joy is a consciousness. Joy is not generated by anything from the outside. Joy springs forth from the heart, and it begins with the realization that you have a heart. A heart that does so much more than just pump blood through your body. A heart
that allows you to feel. And yes, sometimes a heart that can be broken. When I was a young boy, there was an expression, nobody likes a party pooper. And you probably have sung the song, okay? Every party needs a pooper, that's why we invited you, party pooper. Apologize for that, but I'm hoping that some of you could relate to that. Not as a pooper, but as the song. And we had another expression too. Don't be a killjoy. Nobody likes a killjoy. You know how you become a killjoy? By comparing. You start comparing what someone else has that you don't, and boom. Just like that, life becomes a bummer. Or you start taking stock in what others say about you, or the downer messages that others send to you or have sent to you, and yep, try as you might, life isn't going to be fun. You start looking around and comparing what you are and what you have with what the world, all of the commercials and the advertising and the messages are telling you what you're supposed to be, and poof, you've traded your joy for something that isn't real. Because those commercials aren't real. The pictures that they put in front of us are not real. And all of those holdings, those beliefs that somehow you're falling short or lacking, that is not real either. So if you're spending your time and your energy looking back at all of the negative things and thoughts that you've experienced, then you won't know joy if it comes up and kisses you on the nose. Joy can become a feeling only after it has become a focus. There's a really powerful insight in the scriptures in the letter to the Hebrews. And the writer of that letter, in talking about Jesus, shares this verse with us. For the joy set before him, talking about Jesus, he endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. I'm going to repeat that. For the joy set before him, he endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. And what this verse is telling us is that Jesus carried with him an attitude of joy going into the crucifixion. And it does not mean that he didn't feel the pain. It doesn't mean he didn't feel the humiliation, or that the nails were made of rubber, or that he didn't experience the shame of being crucified. What it is saying is that despite this horrendous looming experience going into it, Jesus was joyful. Well, how in the world is that even nearly possible without playing the, well, after all, he was God card? But this verse is not suggesting that Jesus found joy in being nailed to the cross. This verse isn't telling us that this was a pleasant experience. His joy was in the knowing that regardless of the pain and the horror and the shame of everything, it would not, could not, and did not affect the eventual outcome of sitting at the right hand of the throne of God. But listen up, because this is the really tricky part that you need to understand. He was able to affirm his joy. And in his joy, on a really beneath the surface metaphysical level, he already was sitting at the right hand of the throne of God going into the mess. He already was there before anything physically or in some of the realm actually took place. Because joy is that kind of a difference maker. Way back when I was a strapping young teenager, I worked part-time for a leather company. And one day, I was standing in front of a really tall pile of bundles of leather, each one of them weighing about 50 pounds. And all of a sudden, one of those bundles slipped off at the top unexpectedly, without thinking. I tried to catch it. I ended up severely straining my chest muscles to the point of barely being able to move and having serious pain just in breathing, and it's something that lasted almost a week. And I'm sharing this with you because now compare it to the times that I would go to the gym and I would work out, and I would deliberately do chest presses and lift weights over 100 pounds. And yes, at times I would feel some pain, but it was okay. In fact, you might say that it hurt so good. And the difference between these two things is that the first is something that happened to me that I was not ready for. But when I lifted weights, it was something that I made happen. It was a focus. It was deliberate. It was something I did with a sense of purpose. And therefore, I knew before I had the positive effect that it was going to have a positive effect. It was something that I decided. And when we feel the weight of the world, we have a choice. We can allow it to be something that happens to us, over which we have no control, or with an attitude of joy, we can confront it. When we deal with things from a sense of purpose, we move from being victims to victors. And you might say, well, Reverend Mike, yeah, that's all well and good, but still things come out of us out of the blue. And that's why our way shower, Jesus, spoke to us about the importance of being ready. And so the attitude of joy and other things as well, the attitude of love, these cannot be something that you put off and you take off, you know, and put them on occasion. It's something you wear all of the time. You know, we just get it all backwards sometimes. Joy is not the absence of pain. And joy is not the absence of sorrow or troubles. And joy is not about experiencing something that's over the moon spectacular. Joy is not going to make all of the difficulties go away. Joy does not mean that you never will have to deal with a health problem, although it definitely does have a healing aspect to it. Think back to the story in the Hebrew scriptures about the Israelites when they were freed from slavery. And when they finally realized that they were no longer slaves, they rejoiced. But they rejoiced in advance of going into the desert for the next 40 years and having to deal with heat and thirst and hunger and illness in misery of all kind, but their joy had a sense of purpose. Joy is a mission. Joy may be an outcome, but more significantly, joy determines the outcome. In the Gospel of John, Jesus tells his apostles that he is the vine and they are the branches. And just as Jesus has been pruned by the Father, he is now pruning them so that they can bear much fruit. And he's telling them this is all about a call to live a life of purpose. And he concludes his little lecture by telling them that he loves them and reminds them to remain in that love. And then he says, I have told you this so that my joy might be in you and your joy might be complete. And then he signs off by telling them to love one another as he has loved them. You never, ever will have joy simply by wishing for it. In every fairy tale, the heroes have to decide. They have to prioritize what's really important. And they succeed because they know that things like having to get the broom from the wicked old witch are challenges that life can bring to us. Yes, sometimes unexpectedly. It isn't the deeds that they did to overcome these obstacles. The dragons got slayed because they had an attitude that who they were and what they were was more powerful, more loving, more joyful than the dragons. They succeed because they're present in every situation that confronts them. This word presence is really, really important. I want to share with you something that David wrote in Psalm 16. The Lord is my chosen portion and my cup. You hold my lot. Listen to those words, the poetry of them. The Lord is my chosen portion and my cup. You hold my lot. The power of those words. What David is saying is that he eats and drinks the reality of God. He understands that God is always present, and he is purposefully choosing to be present to God or Spirit. And so for our purpose here today, joy always is an all-pervasive part of the divine presence. And so to say yes to your relationship with God, Spirit, or whatever reference you might use to describe the one power, one source of everything, and not lead with joy, somehow it's a contradiction. Joy is about relationship, being present, and relationships are always joyous when the people in a relationship are present to one another. God never, ever steps away from the relationship with you. And if you are not knowing the joy of that relationship, if you're not feeling the love, guess who it is that's not showing up? Because you're too busy looking here and there and elsewhere and back, looking everywhere except for that moment that's right there before you. You know what's really great about Santa? And you folks probably didn't know that he and I were so tight, but we are. In fact, I asked him one time, Santa, why is it that you always come out, you know, with a ho, ho, ho? You know what he told me? He said, well, Reverend Mike, for a lot of times I looked at all of the garbage that's taking place in the world, the sad cases, the children who are hungry, earthquakes and hurricanes, and for so much of my life, I would look at those things and I would react by going, oh, oh, oh. And then I realized I wasn't exercising my power of joy. And so I decided to literally turn those O's around and they became ho, ho, ho. And it made all the difference in the world. And you know what? We love Santa. We intentionally expose our children to him because we know deep down inside that life is supposed to be happy. You were born to be joyous. You are a creation of God. You're not supposed to be dwelling in the depths. You should wear your inner joy the way a flower wears its bloom. You know, that's what you're supposed to do this. And see, we know this deep down inside. Even when we may have personally chosen to bury this truth for ourselves, as we tackle all of the nonsense that we have to deal with and work through. But when we bury it, we go to battle, leaving one of our most effective weapons behind. A joyous attitude. Nobody and nothing can ever, ever take your joy away. If you have one epiphany a Christmas word, right? If you have one epiphany this season, let it be this. Being in alignment with God means understanding that you are intended to be joyful. And I invite you to share in the wisdom of that quote that you've heard before by William James, who said, "I don't sing because I'm happy. I'm happy because I sing." And if you pray one affirmation this Christmas season, let me suggest this. My heart is a bundle of joy. I'm going to open it and unleash whatever it is that is there, and it's going to be wonderful, powerful, exceptional, fantabulous, and joyful. In closing, I want to paraphrase Thomas Waldo Emerson's quote, which was kind of interesting because he was happy even though he had a middle name like Waldo. But I want to paraphrase his quote with this: though we may travel the world over in search of joy, we must carry it with us, or we will find it not.